This is Fresh Air. For years, Shelley Duvall was part of Robert Altman's repertory company of actors. She got her first role in his 1970 movie Brewster McCloud and went on to roles in McCabe and Mrs. Miller, Thieves Like Us, Nashville, Three Women, and Popeye. She also starred in Stanley Kubrick's film The Shining. Shortly after playing Olive Oil in Popeye, Duvall started producing children's shows for cable TV, and ever since then she spent more time behind the camera than in front of it. For her first series, Fairy Tale Theater, she cast stars like Mick Jagger, Liza Minnelli, and Robin Williams in classic children's stories. Her new series, Bedtime Stories, features animated versions of children's books. The series premieres on Showtime April 21st. I asked Shelley Duvall how she convinced cable executives to give her a series when she had no experience as a producer.
Luckily, I was kind of well-known already as an actress, and I had done The Shining, and I was filming Popeye, and I had brought along a book of antique illustrated fairy tales with me, Grimm's Fairy Tales, to the location, which was on the island of Malta, and I figured I would definitely have time to read a book. I didn't have time to read the whole book of fairy tales, but I was reading The Frog Prince one day and thought that Robin Williams would just make a great frog. He was playing Popeye to my Olive Oil. And I talked to Robin about it, and he said, oh, I'd love that. That'd be great. I'd love to play the frog. And so I introduced him to my friend Eric Idle, who's one of the Monty Pythons. And, boy, that was a match made in heaven. And when I got back to Los Angeles, I just went through my books of fairy tales and selected what actors would be great for the parts. You know, like, who would be your favorite choice of the stars that exist today for the roles of Cinderella or Snow White or, you know, any number of characters? So I made out a list of, you know, my wish list of different fairy tales and the cast of actors that I would like to have in them. And I put lots of my antique illustrated books into two big cloth bags. And I went walking in the door of Showtime and said, here's what I want to do. And they said yes. It was amazing to me, too. I mean, boy, they're trusting Olive Oil as a producer. I thought, well, that's risky. But and I'd never produced anything before, but I did have contacts with a lot of celebrities, luckily, and that was as a result of my acting career.
You haven't been making movies lately, and I'm wondering if that's because you're too busy with your other series or if it's for other reasons.
Well, I just haven't paid attention as much as I probably should have to continuing my acting career. But I have acted recently. As a matter of fact, I just went to New Zealand last month to star in a Ray Bradbury theater for USA Network.
Do you think that most casting directors assume that you're not available, and would that assumption be accurate?
Well, I think so, too, but you can put the word out right here and right now, I tell you, because I would love to. I mean, gosh, I go to the movie theater all the time. I love movies. I love watching them, and I see all these good roles. And every time I see one, I think, ooh, I would have loved to have played that role. But, you know, no matter how good somebody was in the role. But being a producer, I guess you get a view of the bigger picture. Well, and I love the fact that I can produce and still sleep in my own bed in my own home at night. You know, that I don't have. The Shining, for instance, was a year and 1 month of filming in London. So, and then Popeye, 6 months later, was 6 months of filming on the island of Malta in the middle of the Mediterranean. So after those two movies back to back, I felt like, gosh, if I could only have a house. Because I grew up in Texas, and I have this great desire to have put down roots, you know.
Could you tell us?
And I have a lot of animals. I have 70 birds and 11 dogs and 2 cats and several lizards. And
70 birds?
I feel. Yep, 70. And many of them are parrots. But listen, everything in my life, I draw from everything in my life. So I've, for instance, written a feature story about some of my birds, some of my parrots.
I have to stop you here. Do your parrots all say things? Do they all say different
things? Oh, yes, absolutely. My parrots talk all the time. It's very noisy at my house.
What do they say?
Particularly in the morning and in the evening. I have a parrot named Humpty, who's an Amazon, yellow-nape Amazon. And he is hilarious. He's like the Robin Williams of parrots. I mean, he'll hang upside down from one leg you know, you think he's going to fall and you run over there to catch him. And he goes, you know, he'll be calling out, help, help, you know. And you get there and he goes, ah, ha, 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 ha. And, you know, being the acrobat that he is, flips himself back up, upright and, you know, no problem at all. It was no emergency, but he just wanted your attention. They all love songs and they're all memorizing songs like Take Me Out to the Ball Game. That's a very popular tune at my house. And whistling things like the beginning of Somewhere Over the Rainbow. So they can whistle that one very good. They don't know the lyrics yet. But some songs they sing the lyrics and some they don't. But I'm on the telephone at home so much. I work a lot out of home on the computer, the fax, and the phone. And they hear me on the phone all the time. So Humpty also says, I taught him this routine too because it was just too funny to pass up. He goes, telephone, telephone, hello, oh, hi, how are you? Uh-huh, uh-huh, oh, fantastic, okay, bye-bye. He does that whole routine. It's hilarious. And I also taught him, two or three of the birds know this one. They know, how does a big dog go? Then he'll go, woof. That's how a big dog goes. And then how does a kitty go? And he goes, meow.
What a house you must
have. I'm going to write some articles for Bird Talk magazine one of these days.
Let me change the subject and get into how you first started to act, which wasn't by design. Would you tell the story of how you were first cast in your first movie, Brewster McCloud, directed by Robert Altman?
Sure. Well, it all started with art, I guess. And my boyfriend at the time, I was 20 years old. I had just dropped out of a junior college. I decided to take a six-month rest from my science endeavors because I didn't like vivisection. And I was taking a break. And I gave a party for my boyfriend, who's an artist. And I was showing his paintings to just some friends of ours, and there were only about 20 people there. I mean, quite often we would give larger parties, and his parents' friends would come to our parties, and we and our friends would go to their parties. So it wasn't unusual one night when three men walked in whom I didn't know. And one of them said, after they saw the paintings and heard my spiel, they said, we have some patrons of the arts for friends. How would you like to bring the paintings up, say, Wednesday at 1 o'clock? I said, well, Bernard has to go back to art college outside of Dallas, so he won't be able to come, but okay, I'll do it. And I brought the paintings up Wednesday at 1 o'clock. My mom dropped me off, and I went through the whole speech about, you know, what the artist was thinking. And there were a lot of patronly-looking gentlemen sitting in a semicircle, and I figured, well, they must be legitimate art collectors. And instead of saying at the end of my speech, instead of saying, we want this one and this one and this one, they said, quote unquote, how would you like to be in a movie? And I thought, uh-oh, oh no, porno. So I started packing up. I was scared to death. I thought, oh my gosh, my mother's going to kill me. My father's going to kill me. I'm really scared. So I started packing up and I was rushing toward the door with the paintings. And I had one hand on the doorknob and the other one with the portfolio under my arm. And they said, well, wait a minute, this is for real. This is for MGM, you know, The Lion That Roars. And this is Robert Altman, who just did the movie called MASH, which opens today. Would you like 10 free tickets? And they said, I took the tickets, by the way. And they said, well, wait a minute, just give us a telephone number where we can reach you and let us take a Polaroid picture. So the Polaroid is, of course, with me with one hand on the doorknob ready to leave. And I wish I still had that picture. And the telephone number I decided to give them just in case was my father's office phone number. Now, my dad's a criminal lawyer. I figure if they can get past my dad, they must be legitimate.
So when you started acting, was this something that you secretly always wanted to do but never thought that you could? Or was it something that you couldn't care less about?
Yeah, I looked at movies as paintings. You know, they were beautiful, and I didn't think I was an artist. I mean, I didn't know. Actually, I didn't think this was a career until after I had finished my third film, which was also for Robert Altman. I've done seven films with Robert Altman, and the last of which being Popeye, which was an unlikely choice for him. But
that third film that you mentioned was Thieves Like Us.
Thieves,
right?
Like Us, uh-huh.
Actress and producer Shelley Duvall is my guest. Her new cable series, Bedtime Stories, premieres this month on Showtime. More after this short break. This is Fresh Air. Actress and producer Shelley Duvall is my guest. One of your best-known movies, The Shining, was directed by Stanley Kubrick, who I think in some ways is probably opposite in style to Robert Altman in the sense that every shot is really well-planned in advance.
Oh, yes.
You know, carefully storyboarded. Everything's, like, very meticulously planned. With Altman, I know there's a lot of spontaneity and improvisation.
Oh, Robert Altman's famous for his wonderful first takes. You know, many shots in his films are first takes and one and only takes.
And with Kubrick?
And with Kubrick, I don't think anything's printed before the 35th take. And that's after about 50 videotaped rehearsals with playback. So it was a very, very difficult experience for me to change over to that style. Plus, the nature of the role was that I had to be very upset for most of the film. For 9 months out of that 1 year and 1 month of shooting, I had to be crying and hysterical and hyperventilating. And that's physically almost impossible to do. I did do it. I don't think that I could ever do it again. I had to cry. He expected full tears on first rehearsal. And I kept trying to explain to him, Stanley, you don't understand. I'm losing all my water weight here. I mean, more water weight than I have to give. And, you know, you just... It really wouldn't be that way in real life.
What did you do to get the tears flowing? I mean, it's one thing to once a night on stage
Oh, I'm sorry. I have a favorite classical piece of music that I listen to cry, and it's a beautiful, beautiful piece by Sir Thomas Tallis. It's called The Lark Ascending, and he's an English composer. And it's performed by St. Martin in the Fields, conducted by Neville Mariner. And if you have that in your collection, you could play it. It's absolutely gorgeous. And I listened to that, and when that violin would hit those higher notes, it worked every time, except for a few times when I just literally dried up. I was so exhausted. But that was a very difficult film for me. I mean, Jack and I both got kind of ill from the smoke that they were using. They were using church incense to smoke up the room, you know, the grand room where Jack chases me around with the
knife.
Bat. Well, with the baseball. Well, I hit him. It culminates in me hitting him with the baseball bat. It's the grand room with the grand piano in it.
Mm-hmm, and mm-hmm.
Where all work and no play makes Jack a dull boy, that scene.
Oh, yeah, I love that scene.
Which was on the call sheet for 3 weeks. We shot that for 3 weeks. It was all done with the Steadicam, all in one shot. And that was a very, very difficult time. But we both got bronchitis from that.
Now, I believe that you turned down Robert Altman once for a wedding, that you turned down a role in the film.
Yes, I did. I had plans, and I had rented a house, and it would have meant losing my summer and losing the plans that I had made and losing the money that I'd put up on the house. So I figured, better not. You know, you can't lose your perspective on life there. You know, I won't do anything for a job.
One last question. Have you ever gotten Robert Altman to do anything on your cable series?
No, I haven't. Bob's always been busy. I mean, right when I was doing Fairy Tale Theater, he went to France to produce films. So he was gone quite a while. Moved his production offices to France and everything. And I was so busy here producing Fairy Tale Theater. You know, we didn't have the money to fly people in from Europe very often. And certainly not a director. I mean, really, we would only fly in a star.
Mm-hmm.
You know, at one point, I got a phone call. I got a message, you know, my assistant came in and said, Shelley, I don't know if this is for real or not, but Fellini's on the phone. And I went, no way, no way. And it was. It's the most incredible thing. I was like, Fellini, you know, oh, he's fantastic. I mean, he's one of my heroes. But we didn't have the money to bring him over to film one. And the insurance and, you know, and making all the arrangements politically so that he could enter the country and work in California, you know, what with all the union rules and everything. I was like, oh, what a disappointment that was. But who knows, maybe someday.
Shelley Duvall, I want to thank you a lot for talking with us.
Thank you. I appreciate it very much.
Shelley Duvall produced and hosts the new animated series Bedtime Stories. It premieres on Showtime April 21st. This is Fresh Air.